We're not supposed to talk about what day of the week it is because it's a podcast. People listen anytime they want. They might not listen to this for years from now. But it's Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. A significant sporting event happened this morning, and we're going to at least mention that. But we are going to talk about another fairly significant milestone in the sporting history of Canada, and that is the departure of, one of the best basketball players that have played here. Is he the best? We'll get into that too. Kyle Lowry is now a member of the Miami Heat, and joining us to discuss the relative merits of Lowry's decision, the Raptors' decision not to re-sign him, assuming they were part of the decision, where we go from here for this basketball club.
What they get for him.
Which we don't know exactly yet.
Right.
We don't think. Doug Smith, nobody better to take a look at it, and we'll do that after these messages. McCowan and Shannon, and our friend Doug Smith joins us from the backyard at his palatial estate.
We call that the home office, right?
In suburban Toronto.
Mississauga Villa. Mississauga Villa, we like to know what that is.
Oh, no. I think that's the name of an old age home, Smitty.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah.
A memorable day in, we're going to talk basketball, of course, later on, but a very memorable day in Canadian sports history. Andre DeGrasse wins the 200-meter final in Tokyo in a record time. I think it's 1962 was the time that he set, about a tenth of a second better than his all-time best. It's an extraordinary moment. I mean, the 200 isn't the 100, but in many ways, it's a far more interesting race.
Oh, I love it. It's fascinating to me that athletes at that level can turn it on exactly the moment they have to turn it on. And that's incredible to me. I love the 200. There is no better moment in sports on earth than the dead silence before the gun goes off in the Olympic 100 meters and the wave of noise that comes after it. It's the most fascinating thing, the most exhilarating thing I've ever seen.
Well, the truth is that at these Olympics, the deadly silence at the beginning of the race was equaled only by the almost deadly silence at the end of the race because there's nobody in the stands.
No, it's really too bad because it does carry athletes through.
Well, the great thing about DeGrasse is we've always commented that he's never had great starts, but the last 100 meters of that race for him, he was light years ahead of everybody else. His acceleration in the second half of the race was spectacular.
He just hunts people down. It was fascinating to watch. He actually tracked guys down in those last 80 meters of that race. It was one of those where were you moments you're going to think about for a lot of years.
Well, he almost did it in the 100, but he was dead last after 25 meters and couldn't make up the rest of the ground. And you had to feel optimistic that with the distance, the fact that he is in the last part of a race, the fastest man in the world, if he can ever get out of the blocks a little quicker, and I don't even know if that's possible at this point, maybe there's still 100 meters in him, but we don't know if he's going to run again. He's done a couple of Olympics. I don't know if he's got a third one in him.
I sure hope so. I don't know what the long the shelf life of world-class sprinters are, but he's not an old man. I really hope he's in Paris. And it's only 3 years. That's the best thing. You don't have to wait for four anymore. You got to wait for three this time around.
Good point. Yeah. Let's get to basketball. The expected has happened. Kyle Lowry is gone. He's now a member of the Miami Heat. Was there any question in your mind as the days ticked down that the Raptors would find a way to keep Kyle Lowry?
I thought they might if Lowry only wanted a two-year deal. But that third year, I think, was a bit of a deal breaker. And I understand it, and I understand it from both sides. If you're the Raptors, I don't think you want to go out 3 years for a 35-year-old point guard. And if you're Kyle, you want to get 3 years because you're a 35-year-old point guard. So I think that was the thing. If he had been content with two, I think the Raptors would have had a shot. When it got settled on three, then I didn't think there was any way he was coming back.
And you don't think, and you think that they would have bitten on the similar salary that he had previously with the Raptors, $30 million?
Yeah, salary is basically just money because it doesn't affect the cap if you're keeping your own guy. Like they're not spending against anything, but. You know, it might have been a little bit less, and you know, maybe 30 was a number the Raptors didn't want to go to. But money wouldn't have been the issue, I think, with the Raptors, who they probably would have liked him back, but I think 2 years was as far as they would go.
So this deal is consummated as a sign and trade, but principally to allow Miami cap flexibility to sign Lowry and whatever else they do or have done, correct?
Yeah, and it gets them, allows Miami to give Lowry a little bit more money. They didn't have to get rid of guys. They got rid of guys in this transaction. They didn't have to move. They were able to pick up Dragic's option so we could put him in this trade, which they probably wouldn't have done, but they wouldn't have been able to give Kyle Lowry $30 million. So, yeah, it's a favor from both sides to the other kind of thing. And it gets the Raptors, assets. And you know, everybody killed Masai for letting Kawhi Leonard walk for nothing. Well, he didn't let Kyle Lowry walk for nothing. So I think in that regard, it's a win.
How much different is this deal from Miami than they would have got at the trade deadline?
I don't think they would have moved. Well, they wouldn't have been able to extend Lowry out for 2 years at the trade deadline, two more years at the trade deadline. That's an issue. The personnel is probably the same. The numbers fit money-wise, but if you're going to give a guy a three-year contract, you want to get him, I think, at the start of the year. And they couldn't do that. They couldn't trade for him and extend him last March.
The public will pursue or perceive this to be a loss to the Raptors. Is there any way to mitigate that opinion?
An immediate loss, probably not. The Raptors are worse off without Kyle Lowry on the team. I think there's no question about that. They're worse off now. Are they going to be worse off in 18 months? I don't know. I think Masai and Bobby Webster are playing the long game. And they're going to put together a team of young players that maybe is 2 years away from being a legitimate championship contender. But you got to understand, this team doesn't suck now. Like it's certainly not Brooklyn, and it might not be Milwaukee. But if you got Van Vliet, whatever Dragic turns into, or Dragic, Gary Trent Jr., Anunoby, Siakam, Kem Birch, Chris Boucher, they love Scotty Barnes. They just think he's going to be a fantastic player. And I tend to agree with them. That's not a bad team. So they're playing a longer game than bringing Kyle Lowry back on a year or two-year deal was they wanted to play. And yeah, short-term, they're worse off. No question about it. Long-term, I think they're probably going to be better.
Your expectation that Dragic plays for this team or not?
Right now, I think no. I think they will find a way to move him in the next 24, 36 hours. I think Dallas is obviously the place he wants to go, and it's the right fit. Whether they can make the personnel work, I don't know, but I would be really surprised if he plays. I don't think they would be crushed if he had to play, but I think they really, really want to move him on.
And would it be safe to say that the Raptors' objective in moving Dragic would be to find a big?
Yeah, a big, a younger player. Obviously, Dragic is 35. But, you know, I think in Dallas, everybody's looking at Dwight Powell, the Toronto kid, because he's a very, you know, he's a young, kind of like that 6'9", jumping jack, 4'5", 3'4", 5', versatile kind of player that the Raptors seem to love. You know, the Raptors love him, but so do the Dallas Mavericks. Mm-hmm. So now you got to negotiate around that and see what other pieces you can do to satisfy everybody's needs. But yeah, they wouldn't move Dragic for a wing. They're going to move him, I think, for a big man because that's what they don't have. They don't have anybody they don't have Boucher under contract yet or Birch under contract yet. They'll get them there. But right now they are very woefully thin in the front court, and that's where they got to move Dragic for.
We live in an era where, you know, we grew up in an era following basketball where there were five positions that were all unique, that all had their own names and all had their own skill sets and all had their own responsibilities. And that era has clearly passed. But do you need a big in order to be successful in the NBA? Do you? I mean, not, and I'm not even talking, Smitty, you know this. I'm not talking about a back to the basket traditional Kareem Abdul-Jabbar style center.
Right.
But you need a guy that can get boards for you, especially.
Yeah. And whether you can get good rebounding out of 6'9" guys is the big question. And that's what you have to have. Absolutely. Like you look at the teams in the finals, DeAndre Ayton and Lopez were 7-footers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you need some size up there, but size could be, if you have a really skilled 6'9" guy, like, you know, I think Bam Adebayo in Miami is no bigger than 6'9", but he's a very effective center in the NBA these days. If you get that guy, then you're okay. But it's finding that guy with that skill set at that size, who is also, if you're the Raptors, able to jump out and shoot a little bit, come out and guard on the perimeter, which is another huge thing, which neither Ayton nor Lopez really could do. And I think you saw that exposed a little bit. That's the, you know, Nick Nurse is always saying he wants to play five guys who are 6'9" that could all shoot. Well, everybody does. Mm-hmm. It's finding them and getting them on your roster. That's the big thing.
Well, besides Powell, who isn't that guy necessarily, is there somebody out there that they would aspire to get, or we're past that point?
I think we're past that. You look at the list of free agents, and it was underwhelming to start.
Yeah.
And now it's even more underwhelming because it's been picked over with all the good players gone. I think if they had to go in the season with Ken Burch as their starting center, they'd be okay with it. It wouldn't be optimum, but, you know, he showed last year. He's okay. He's not going to hurt you. And he was showing a little bit of shooting range, which they really liked at the end of last year. So that's not a horrible thing. Now, you don't know if they make a trade who might be available, because you don't know what other teams think of their own guys. So there might be something out there, but I don't think so. And you look at the free agent list, it's picked over. There's nothing there to go spend money on.
So where does Scottie Barnes fit in this then, Doug?
I'm not sure what position he is. He could be anything from a small center to a two guard, because he's got that kind of skill set. The Raptors have been tracking him for 5 years. Whenever he plays for USA Basketball in the summer at World Championships or age group championships, they love him. They see him as that kind of guy who's a hybrid. He doesn't really have a position, but he can play a lot of them. And I think he's anywhere from a 3, 4, 5. I think you could play him next to Ananobi and Siakam. I mean, you play him next to Boucher and Ananobi. I don't think he's going to ever have a position as such.
And the thought process of this organization, how long before he becomes an impact player?
Oh, I think they expect him to be a marginal impact player this year. But I think in his second and third year, he really gets into the NBA, grows into his body a little bit, gets used to the speed and the caliber of the competition every night. But they think he's going to be a big, big time player rather quickly.
Sorry, John, go ahead.
No, I just to finish on Scotty, were you surprised they didn't take Suggs, or did you have a hint?
I said they should have taken Barnes all along. I might be the only guy. I think he's the best fit, and he's the best kind of guy. He's the best guy that they like. Multi-positional, sort of, like, again, hybrid kind of guy. Suggs is a really good player, no question about it. But I'm not sure that he gets much better in the NBA, and I think Barnes can. And they're playing a little, but I was one of the few people that are right, that if they couldn't get Mobley, the big out of USC, Barnes was the guy they should get, and I'm glad they got him.
I guess the easiest thing to say is, with the absence of Lowry, and you can make the argument that Van Vliet essentially takes Lowry's role in its entirety rather than in a part-time basis. And we acknowledge that the center position is a work in progress, at the very least. Is there anything else this team can really use? I mean, let's not go to the bench, because the bench was relatively unproductive last year. Maybe they've got enough young players to come off that bench to ignite the team for a short period of time. But is there anything else you think they do?
They need shooting. They don't have enough shooting right now. And whether it evolves or develops, or they find it in the middle of the season, or they find it somehow from somewhere, I don't think they have enough three-point shooting right now.
Isn't that Malachi Flynn for now?
No, I don't think so. I think it's going to have to be Ananobi. I think Trent's got to be a significant contributor every night. I don't know if he will be. I think Siakam has to be a more effective three-point shooter when he gets back. I think whoever plays, I think Birch has to be able to step out and knock down shots. They just don't have enough shooting right now, and that's the big thing you need in the NBA. I don't know where they're going to find it. Maybe they'll find it in some sort of crazy transaction in the season, or they'll get some guy come out of nowhere and become a shooter, but that's going to be an issue with this team, I think.
So Van Vliet is a given starter. We don't even that's an obvious thing to say. Who's the other guard? Who that slots in at that other spot? Is it Trent?
I think it's Trent. Yeah, I'm not really sold on his ball handling skills or his ability to move the ball. He's a really good shooter, but he's got a lot of work to do on other facets of his game. But I don't see anybody else on the roster who starts there. I think it's Van Vliet, Trent, Anunoby, Siakam, and Birch when the season starts.
What's that good enough to do to get you?
Middle of the pack in the East, behind Brooklyn and behind Milwaukee, but right there with all the other teams. Like you really
think, huh?
Yeah, I do. I guess the provision is that we don't know what Philly's going to do with Simmons and what they become and how they turn that, what they turn that into. So the jury's got to be out on them, but I think they're as good as New York, Miami, Chicago. Chicago's going to be pretty good. I think Washington took a step back. I don't think Boston's any better. And I think you just got to play the games. I think it's going to be, you could finish anywhere from third to seventh, third to eighth, but you see how it develops in the season and who makes what moves in the season.
And the discussion, any discussions about Siakam leaving seem to have evaporated, or was that just a fictional story that got us through the month of July?
I think it was a lot of, it's early in the off season. Let's write something stuff. I don't think they are, they could in the right package, they would move him, I'm sure, but I don't think the right package is out there. I don't think that his value is high enough right now. And I still think he's a pretty good player. And I think he's worth at least seeing, he more than anybody, maybe in the NBA, was affected by the bubble and the move to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really messed him up. When he gets home and he gets back in his routine and his rhythm and he's living in Toronto and doing his, living his life, they hope you'll see him return to what he was.
How would you categorize the Raptors' interest in Simmons, understanding that Philadelphia's ask until this point has been off the charts? But, I mean, would they, at the right number, would they go after Simmons?
I think they'd have to look at him because he is hugely skilled. Like, he's maybe one of the best defenders in the NBA, can play all five positions, great passer, great ball handler, great in transition. He just cannot shoot, and that's the huge thing. If you believe in your developmental program and you believe in his work ethic, I think he can become a passable NBA shooter. But he's shown no indication in 4 years. He showed no willingness in 4 years to get better. And that, to me, is very, very troubling. Because it is a skill that can be taught and can be learned. We've seen it. We saw it with Siakam. We saw it with Anunoby. Hell, we saw it with Jose Calderon. It can be learned. And he has shown no willingness to learn it in 4 years.
Can you even begin to explain why his reluctance is clearly the obvious flaw in his game, and yet he seems completely unconcerned by it? And let's get real blunt. Basketball is a sport where a lot of points are scored, more points than in any other sport. Don't you want to be a scorer?
Yeah, you would certainly think so. I don't know, because I'm not really close to Philly, but what I think is they let him get away with it. His coaches. I remember Brett Brown saying, we don't need him to shoot that much. And Doc Rivers saying, okay, if he shoots a little bit, we're okay. Someone should have been on his butt right from the start. You got to become a shooter or we're not going to play you. And you're not going to make $135 or $170 million. You got to learn this skill that can be taught. I think they let him get away with not shooting too long.
Doug, Bob and I have talked about this before. This appears to me from a distance that the guy who has been disappointed enough in Simmons is Doc Rivers. And Rivers is saying, listen, for that kind of money, we can't have a guy with flaws. And he has a giant flaw.
Yeah, not flaws that glaring and that important in such an important facet of the game. And yeah, absolutely saw it with Doc. Doc didn't play him. In the last seconds of the most vital games of the season, he sat his butt on the bench. If that's not a message of what your coach thinks, and maybe if Brett Brown had done that in his second year or Simmons' third year, we might not be having this discussion today.
One of the things that I kind of come back to over and over again is the Raptors' philosophy. And philosophies do change. But this team always talked about to win a championship, you got to be a great defensive team. You got to be able to play defense. You got to be able to switch. You got to be able to guard multiple positions, all blah, 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 blah. And they were that. They were not that last year. And that there may be a million reasons for it, but the emphasis on good defense night in and night out seemed to dissipate. Can you explain this?
I think last year was a lot of personnel, and they, you know, they basically punted the last 25 games of the year.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
And I think this year they've addressed that with Barnes, who is a very, very plus defender. I think we know Anunoby has got the potential to be on the defense, the first off defensive team in the NBA. And Van Vliet, I think, is a very tenacious defender. I think they'll get back to it. I think last year was an aberration because of personnel. You know, they got nothing out of the center spot all year in Baines and Lynn, just simply got nothing from it. Their bench was a bunch of guys. And you know, they were good guys. They're nice guys, and I hope DeAndre Bembry and Rodney Hood and Paul Watson Jr. And Stanley Johnson, I hope they make $1 million and play for 100 years. But they weren't that good in Toronto. And they got to go. And you got to get better guys in here.
Well, yeah.
I think that's the harshness of it, but that's the reality of it. They gave up on last year about the middle of February. And that was okay. It was a conscious decision by ownership and management to say, okay, we'll give guys nights off. If we get the sixth pick, great. If we get the fourth pick, even better. If we get the eighth pick, that kind of sucks. Hmm. But now I think you get back to them demanding excellence defensively, and they've kind of addressed it with Barnes and whatever they do with the big.
Well, and that's, I'm circling back here. This is why I raised the question with Simmons, because the one thing that is intriguing to me, and you've acknowledged, and I think everybody knows, he's a terrific defensive player.
Absolutely.
And that seemed to be the focus of this franchise for several years during the building process and then during the championship year. And that's why I asked the question originally, Smitty, about, you know, what's the level of interest there? Because he seems to be exactly the kind of guy that Masai Ujiri and Nick Nurse would love.
Except that he can't shoot.
Can't shoot.
And I guess the other thing is, the other big question is, do you have to gut your team to get him?
And if according to the Sixers, the answer is yes.
We got to gut your team for 10 years because they want 4 first round picks, right? Out maybe over a decade. But if you have to kill your team as it exists and put him in a role where he has to score, then it's not worth getting. As a guy on a team that has a bunch of scorers around him, he's going to be great. But if you take away from the cast around him to get him, then I think you're asking him to do stuff that he hasn't shown any ability to do.
Well, just for fun, who wins a Siakam for Simmons trade?
Well, if you just put the other guy on the other team as it exists now, I think Philly does, because I think Siakam will absolutely shine next to Joel Embiid. Mm. Because he'll have all kinds of shit of space to operate and no pressure.
Right. Well, and they're both...
Simmons coming here would have to score, and I don't know that he's able to.
Would Philly make that deal?
Would Philly make that deal? If they would need 4 draft picks to go with it, and I don't think the Raptors would do it.
No.
Because that's too long-term a price to pay.
But that's interesting because salary-wise, they're comparable.
Close enough, yeah. You could fit the money, or you could make the money work.
Yeah. By your own acknowledgement, Philadelphia would win that deal probably, and yet Philadelphia won't make that trade because they think Simmons is worth more.
Yeah, I think so. I think absolutely. You know, you can see what Philly's doing. They're setting a price for Ben Simmons. It's absolutely totally unrealistic, and hoping that someone bites. But there's nobody desperate enough right now to bite, and I don't know that anybody will ever be desperate enough to bite at that level.
Yeah.
And you know, all the power to them to try it, but they gotta move them. I think everybody in the NBA knows the guy, he cannot start the season in Philly. It will just tear that team apart. It will tear the organization apart. It can't happen. So if you're the other 29 team, just sitting back.
You're just waiting. Okay,
hey, call me in training camp. Call me when Embiid's all ticked off at the third exhibition game. Then we'll talk, and we're going to give you 40 cents on the dollar instead of 75 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no. Now, Bob, just before we go, has your tune changed about Simmons? Because I thought you were not wanting to trade for Ben Simmons.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not a proponent of it. I'm just acknowledging the love affair.
Okay,
that
I'm asking you to be a decision maker. Are you making the deal?
Me, I would not trade for Ben Simmons. If I was running an NBA team at whatever cost, I would not trade for Ben Simmons because I don't think there's something about him that he just will not get better. And that goes to far more than physical skills. That goes to a mental toughness. And I don't think that's going to change.
Remember, we saw this back at LSU too, Doug. This is nothing new. I mean, this is a guy who, as good as he was, I mean, his team didn't even make the tournament.
This sounds a little bit weird, but a guy like Dwight Howard never became a better basketball player.
Right.
His offensive limitations in his rookie year are his offensive limitations now. Ben Simmons' offensive limitations in his rookie year are bigger offensive limitations now. And I don't think there's a magic potion to turn him around.
No, and you made the statement, and I'm not arguing it, that Philadelphia obviously did not insist on Ben Simmons working on his shooting game. But I think this comes down to, we talk about this a lot in sports now, and especially in basketball, a personal pride.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons didn't seem to have that personal pride to say, I know that I'm not good at this. I'm going to become good at this.
100%. And maybe Philly grinded him. Maybe Philly said, you got to go work all summer on the shot, and he didn't do it. Which would tell me a lot more about him than it did about Philly.
Well, that's my concern too, there's that personality thing that is unclear.
Yeah.
And unclear is the same as bad, in my opinion. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more. Doug Smith is with us after these messages. McCowan, Shannon, and our friend Doug Smith as we talk hoops. Now, I don't know how long this segment's going to go. It may be long, it may be loud, or it may be brief and to the point. But we got into a conversation the other day subsequent to the word that Lowry had signed with the Miami Heat. And I don't need to tell you that literally everybody has opined that Kyle Lowry is the greatest Raptor ever. Is he?
This is my answer to that one. He's the greatest Raptor. Vince is the most important Raptor.
Well,
and there is a difference. But as a player, he had those intangibles and that drive to make others around him better and to permeate a franchise. And we didn't see that in Carter. We didn't see it in DeRozan. We didn't see it in Stoudemire. We saw a little bit in Stoudemire, but he was such an aberration because it was expansive.
Well, it was so early.
Yeah, you don't know. We certainly didn't see it in Chris Bosh when he was here. Kyle's imprint, and the word culture around a team sort of drives me nuts because it's so nebulous and so undefinable. But if the Raptors have a culture, Lowry built it. And people molded themselves around what he did. And I think for that, he's the best player they've had.
That's not recency bias, Doug. I mean, because there is a generation we're three old white guys. But when you talk to a Raptor fan, when you talk to the Raptors fan base now, there are people that didn't see Vince play. Most
20.
Raptor fans, see Vince play. So how can we measure Lowry at the same? Because I think it was Carter. I do think it was Carter because of how he changed, not only, and again, my criteria are different than most people maybe, but how he changed not only the basketball team, but how he changed basketball in our country.
Yeah, that's why I get to important versus best. And Carter is by far the most important in that regard. He made the game here. There's no question. And
there are how many guys in the NBA? A lot of them because of the influence of Vince Carter.
He was an astonishing player. No question. And he was a good shooter and he was a good dribbler and he was a pretty good defender. Like he was much more than just a dunker, but he didn't drag his team kicking and screaming to win he got dragged along with guys like Oakley and Dell and Kevin Willis and Alvin. Kyle dragged guys along to win. And I think that is maybe the differentiation between the two.
You know, I hear that and I can't dispute it. But here's what I will say. Basketball is not a one man game. One guy does not win a championship. Even the, and you know, we're not talking about Kyle Lowry in the same breath as LeBron.
No.
Right. You know, we're not trying to even, let's not go down that road. That's ridiculous. But LeBron needed help and support. And this Raptor team, while they emerged and were very good with Kyle and DeRozan, who did them all, the bulk of the scoring, they didn't get over that hump until they got Kawhi. And there's right. absolutely no doubt that Kawhi was the reason they won a championship.
Absolutely.
But I mean, we were not going to argue that if DeRozan was still there instead of Kawhi, if Masai hadn't pulled the trigger on the Kawhi deal, the Raptors still would have won the championship in 19. No way.
No question about it. But my point is back in 2000, 2001, Vince was on a very, very good team. That 2001 team that played Philly was exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
Oakley was great. Dell was a great shooter. Alvin was great. Antonio Davis was outstanding. Jerome Williams contributed mightily to that team. It didn't get over the hump because the guy missed one shot, maybe. But Lowry, over his time here, got them over the hump. Because he was an integral part of it. Now, obviously, he doesn't get there without Kawhi, but no one, you look at every NBA great. Shaq didn't win until he had help. LeBron didn't win until he had help. Michael didn't win until he had help. None of them did. Kobe didn't. None of them do. Durant, Curry, blah, blah, blah. Every one of them. Kyle got the help and they won. Vince had some help and they didn't win.
Kyle also had help from other places other than Kawhi. Obviously, he had a Ibaka who had the best season of his career that year.
Yeah, Siakam,
and Gasol wasn't
the best player in the finals.
Mm-hmm. Sorry,
Siakam might have been the second best Raptor in the finals.
All that, you know, it was right guys, right place, right time, and I look at it not contrary to you necessarily, but that Vince team with all of those guys on it, that where Vince missed the shot against Philly, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good team, but it was too old to keep together for another run at it. Essentially, it had veteran players on it, and you know they were at, I don't know if they're at the peak of their career, but they were probably a little bit on the downside of their career.
Tell you, there was a lot of, I happened to be around that team a little bit. And Doug was around as well. There was a lot of politics around that team. There was a lot of politics around that team that Vince was on. And it's funny, you talked about how the Sixers have coddled Ben Simmons. The question could become, did the Raptors in that era coddle Vince Carter?
I'm sure to some level they did, but he also performed.
Doubt.
He also performed.
Yes, mm-hmm. He did.
And Simmons hasn't. There was a lot of politics around the 2019 Raptors team too.
Yeah, was there?
Given Kawhi 20 nights off to rest was fine when they won a championship. If they had lost that series to Philly, I don't think people.
Oh, they'd be bitching and complaining.
There might have been some little snide stuff off the record. And even during the season, you could kind of feel it every now and then. It's like, oh, we're a little roll in the eyes, off again. It was an unequal treatment of players on that roster, as I think you have to have to win. You have to have special players get special treatment. They should, because they're special players. I understand that. It's the way the world in sports works. But if you don't win, then you got to deal with the repercussions. And the repercussions, if they don't win in 2019, would have been a lot of, oh, man, what did we do that for? Why did we do this? Or how come that happened? But they won, so everything's all pieces, so, you know, sweetness and light.
I guess that's why that first year with the Clippers wasn't as rosy for for Kawhi in many ways, right?
And the second year wasn't rosy. And I think next year will be rosy. It takes a unique group of personalities and men to put up with stuff if you get to the ultimate goal. And if you don't get to the ultimate goal, then you start to fray. And if you don't get to the ultimate goal the next time, then things fray even more. Now, I think the Clippers are in danger of absolutely going off the rails next year. If Kawhi probably doesn't play for a long time because he just had knee surgery and they might not be that good. And then who knows, then they start pointing more fingers at Paul George, and maybe Steve Ballmer having $7,000 billion isn't a great thing. And maybe Ty Lue isn't the second coming of Phil Jackson. I think that's a very interesting mix you're going to watch in the Clippers next season.
Well, one of the things I recall very vividly, and I'm guessing you do too, was when Kawhi announced he was going to L.A. And we saw the deal was, and I believe it was 4 years, but with a 2 year out, and that's where he's at now. There were plenty of people that said, oh, well, maybe he'll come back after 2 years. Well, that's clearly not happening, right?
Right. And it was never going to, was clearly never happening from the start, but it was nice
right.
and clean.
Right. Right. I don't know. I like the coverage. I like the helicopter and the, you know, the Suburban, the big black Suburban going down University Avenue.
Well,
that was come on now.
It was theater.
It was.
Theater of the absurd, but theater.
You watched it, Smitty.
The one thing that we talk about with some regularity, or and maybe don't talk about it enough, is the Toronto sports fans, and to a great extent, Canadian sports fans, fall in love with the athletes that put on the hometown uniform and consistently believe that the players who wear that uniform are the best. They enhance the value of that player by 1,000%, at least until they change uniforms. I'm not sure with Kawhi anybody was wrong. I think he was that good.
Oh, he was that good.
I agree with you, Doug. That period of Vince Carter was electric. And he was as electric an athlete to watch. I mean, he just didn't want to miss a game because you didn't know what he was going to be able to do. And I think we forget about that. And he stayed around a long time where he couldn't do all those things, and the way he left and blah, blah. Everybody, you know, went from love affair to hate. That's kind of where I'm at with Lowry, though. I think if you stick around Toronto for 9 years, everyone will fall in love with you, and they will evaluate post-career the greatness of that athlete beyond the reality.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to slag Kyle. He's a terrifically talented player and was everything the Raptors needed at the time.
And it never got done in Toronto with Vince because of the way he left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's too bad, because that cost him and the fans 10 years of interesting, fun memories that they spent all that time hating him and hating how he left and hating the organization and hating the circumstances instead of appreciating what they had. And that was a shame. It was a shame when it was going on. And looking back now that there's a love affair again with Vince among the Raptor fans, it's a shame that it cost them a lot of time together.
Okay. Oh, love affair with Raptor fans. Does that mean we're retiring the 15?
Oh, I think they gotta.
I agree.
I think they gotta do it first.
Do they retire seven?
They'll retire seven after Kyle retires from the game. I don't think you can do anything for anybody while he's playing.
No, I agree. No, that goes without saying.
I think you do 15 and seven.
You know,
I also don't think you retire numbers. I think you do something else. Statue. Something like that.
Yeah. One more before we go. If you're building a statue outside of, what's the building called? Scotiabank Arena?
It is now, yes. So, yeah. Our friends at Scotiabank appreciate the plug, Bob.
It's called Skydome, but I'm not sure. Or the Molson Amphitheater.
It's been so long since anybody played there, really.
Maybe it's the O'Keefe Center.
I kind of forgot the name. I almost said ACC. But you're going to build a statue. A bronze statue outside. Hmm. Who's the statue of?
Wow. I hate to give the pucks credit, but I think you got statues got to be of all of them.
Yeah, see, that's...
Oh, no, basketball.
I know. I think it's got to be all the Raptors. I think it's got to be, if you're going to do it, then I think you got to do Vince, Kyle.
Are you going to do Bosch?
No, I don't think I'm going to do Bosch. I might do Damon. I might do DeMar. I might do Kawhi. Might do Kawhi. Maybe just do the two.
Boy, that's, I tell you what, that's very Canadian of you, Doug.
Well, I would do two. I would do Vince and Kyle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would do Vince. I don't want to sound like the grumpy old man and unappreciative. I think Kyle Lowry was fantastic for this organization. I loved his enthusiasm. I think he was a catalyst to all the things that happened. But, you know, building a statue is something memorable, significant.
Yeah.
And I'm not there yet.
No, I certainly do Vince first.
Yeah.
Because he was the first.
Yeah.
And he did what he got them to where they got to. But
I know that Bob said last question, but I have one. So you talked about Lowry's ability to make people around him better. Is there a night that jumps out at you? Is there an event that jumps out of you that says, hey, when you're sitting, you're there courtside. Is there something that he did one night that says, oh my God, this is somebody special?
You know what? I don't remember one specific incident, but I do remember the way he helped DeMar develop into a tough player. DeMar wasn't a really particularly tough kid when they started out together.
He was soft, in fact.
But he kind of hardened him by being around him.
Mm-hmm.
And DeMar had a little feistiness to him at the end that I credit Kyle a lot for bringing out of him. But with Lowry, it wasn't one thing. It was the strength of his personality over time. And his personality was crotchety, but it evolved. And as it evolved, it brought people into him. When he got here, he drove people away. 4 years in, he brought people into him. And that, I think, is to his credit. And I said this the other day, to Dwayne Casey's credit. Because Casey handled him absolutely perfectly when they first got here.
Can't argue that one. Smitty, I know you want to move back about 15, 20 feet so you can get in the sunshine and maybe have a foamy beverage.
I think that might happen sometime soon, yes.
We'll let you proceed and undertake that exercise. And we look forward to the chance to chat with you again. Probably not till, well, unless something happens of significance, we may call you, but maybe not until training camp. But nonetheless, thanks, pal. Always good to see you.
I'll be here, guys. Take care of yourselves. Thank you for having me again.
Doug Smith, we'll come back after these messages. So our thanks to Smitty for being with us. And
he looked miserable, huh?
He looked happy.
No, I'm being
facetious. That was the happiest I've seen him.
Well, the weather's beautiful. His backyard looks great. You know, the keg's off to the side.
You recall he had some health issues. And, yes. Boy, he's back to normal.
Yeah. Well,
he looks the same.
And here's the amazing thing. I don't think anybody, I mean, I don't know what it is for the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield for media people, but when you think of the years that Doug has been around the NBA and around this basketball team, I don't think there's anybody with the resume that he has about the knowledge of this team and the sport in our country right now than Doug Smith.
Oh, he's at the top of my, absolutely at the top of my list in terms of with due respect to all the others. Many of whom are friends and who I respect as well. But if I want to know, if I want to get an advised opinion on anything basketball related, Doug Smith is the place I'm going first.
Mm-hmm.
And I make no apologies for that. And I'm not sucking up to him because we got him and he's been on. We will have a show for you tomorrow.
What?
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
We just have no idea what we're going to do. Well, we do.
No, we do.
But we don't want to announce it because we've been disappointed before.
Yes. It's like your last date, Bob. You know, you've been disappointed before.
No, that would be inaccurate, John.
Oh.
It would be every date I've ever had.
It's been disappointing?
Has been disappointing.
For them or you?
Well, certainly for them. That goes without saying.
Okay.
So a surprise guest tomorrow. And I don't want to blow it out of proportion.
No,
I
mean, don't.
You know, it's not like, who would be the ultimate guest? Well, the one guy I haven't talked to. I'm not sure I want to, but it's not Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
But when people talk about the guests that I haven't had, he is almost invariably at the top of the list. And I don't
think Michael Jordan is?
Yeah, I don't think he'd be a good guest.
I agree with you.
But he's the biggest name.
Yeah.
That I haven't had.
Yeah. That's a good question. There's a couple of people, but I always think of media people too. So like executives in the media world that we really don't know them, their names, but they know the regular public doesn't know their names, but the influence they've had in the business of what's going on. Yeah, I'm actually trying to get one the last couple of weeks, or getting the producer to get one. So,
well, yeah, but for the audience, you know, while they certainly are interested, at least our audience understands that we do a lot of business stuff and apparently they like it or they're interested in it. You know, when we're talking big names, you know, Muhammad Ali, I had Jim Brown, I had Bear Bryant, I had, like, those are the three pillars of my career, if you will, in terms of interviews. Not that they were necessarily the best interviews ever. They probably weren't, but they were gets that many, many, many never got.
Right.
And I think the next one would be Jordan. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can come up with somebody else.
I have to think about that. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll put your thinking cap on. Assuming you have one. And we will bid the audience a fond adieu, and we'll see you tomorrow with somebody, we think. Goodbye, everybody.
There's nobody. We're in trouble.